I'd like to introduce a brother who's a fierce and dedicated activist for Nodukdol, for Korean community development. And he will be depicting a vivid picture of history of intervention in Korea, and also drawing crucial connection to struggles here in U.S. Please welcome Jan Cho.
Good evening. Good evening, hello. For a moment there, I thought I was back in the Korean American Association, and they were telling me that this event was being canceled. I wanted to start by my presentation by stating two points. One, there is currently a crisis on the Korean Peninsula over the Bush administration's allegations of North Korean nuclear weapons development. This crisis has become so serious that 2 days ago, the previous Secretary of War, William Perry, attacked George Bush in the Washington Post for refusing to negotiate with North Korea. And this is a quote from the Washington Post. "My theory is the reason we don't have a policy on this and we aren't negotiating is the president himself. I think he has come to the conclusion that North Korean leader Kim Jong-il is evil and loathsome and is immoral to negotiate with him," unquote. Now you have to remember that Perry is no dove. In fact, he's considered a hawk and was the one who drew up the plans to attack North Korea in 1994. When we came within a hairbreadth of starting a full-scale war that would have cost millions of lives. Why would someone like Perry, a member of the establishment, suddenly decide to attack a sitting president? More interestingly, what would make the North Korean leadership stand up against the most powerful superpower in the world? Even with the recent example of Iraq still shining so brightly before the trembling feet of other nations. It's now come to light in the past week through a leak in the White House that the Pentagon is working on a secret plan number 5030 designed to initiate aggressive military actions against North Korea, including maritime interdiction of ships in international waters. This is a clear violation of international law and what many would consider an act of war. Needless to say, this will result in the deaths of millions and the devastation of the entire Northeast Asia region. It could even, incidentally, hurt the investments of Perry and his friends sitting on the boards of General Motors and other multinational conglomerates. The second point is to remind everyone here that millions of South Koreans were in the streets last year protesting the killing of two schoolgirls and demanding the removal of 37,000 American troops who have occupied Korea since 1945. Many Americans may be puzzled by this. They may say, "Didn't we save them from the communist menace?" They may ask, "Our troops are there to protect Korean democracy and freedom. The least these Koreans could do is to show some consideration for all the help we've given them." Now, these types of ignorant comments only serve to expose the complete lack of understanding that many Americans have of Korea, a country where we as taxpayers spend billions of dollars every year propping up a national security state where citizens are routinely arrested, tortured, detained for years, and sometimes killed for speaking their minds. This year, we celebrate two very important anniversaries. The 50th anniversary of the Korean War Armistice, important because it symbolizes the fact that the war is not technically over, and that the U.S. continues to refuse to sign a peace treaty with North Korea, the first third world country to inflict massive American losses after the Second World War. And it's interesting to note that the Pentagon has decided to celebrate the culmination of this multi-year commemoration of the Korean War, with medals and trips for veterans, parades, monuments, and as many of you know, the whitewash and cover-up of the cold-blooded murder of over 300 men, women, and children at Nogun Ri. And this murder was done by retreating elements of the U.S. 7th Cavalry, a very famous military unit, a unit which, by the way, is also implicated in the massacre at Wounded Knee, where over 300 Native Americans, most of them old men, women, and children of the Sioux Nation, were murdered in similarly cold blood. The same unit, by the way, that participated in the massacre of millions during the suppression of the Philippine War for Independence against American colonization, and the same unit that suppressed the Boxer Rebellion in China, and many other such illustrious actions of American benevolence towards our little yellow and brown brothers and sisters around the world. The second anniversary is the 100th anniversary of Korean immigration into the United States. This is important because it underlines the basic relationship of Korean Americans to the wider US society. We first came as plantation laborers, some of us as indentured servants, to work on Hawaiian plantations recently colonized by American merchants and missionaries. We came as scabs to help break up a nascent labor organizing among existing Asian laborers. So I think it's really important to know that there's an underlying pattern here of labor and military force that we have a relationship, a very visceral relationship with the US. And by the way, I recently ran into the co-chair of the Korean American Centennial Committee, and he's a businessman, and we had this, you know, little difference between why there should be a war in Korea and not. And, you know, finally came down to, for him, you know, he admitted that war is good business. And I was a little puzzled by that, and I kept asking, well, what do you mean? And, well, you know, he's a businessman, he wants to make money, and war is good business. And I don't know, it just, this is a guy who is so-called leader of our community, saying something like this, despite the fact that millions of people are going to die in a war, his own countrymen. And I think that really symbolizes to me the mentality of a lot of collaborators who exist within our community. And at one point, I hope those collaborators will go away. but what I think is the most important anniversary is the 137th year of US intervention in Korea. The events of July 1866, I believe, set a pattern for relations between Korea and the US for the next century and to the present. 137 years ago, only a year after the Civil War, an armed merchant marine schooner, the USS General Sherman, was dispatched to Korea to survey the waters of Korea. When the Americans refused to leave and continued to sail up the river towards Pyongyang, the defenders sunk the ship and killed all aboard. The General Sherman incident triggered a debate in Congress about what to do with Korea, kind of like the one we had in Iraq. You can imagine Democrats and Republicans talking about liberty and democracy, how to invade a third world country. What resulted, of course, was, well, guess what won? The American invasion. In June 1871, a US naval force is sent on a punitive expedition and kills over 350 Koreans. On May 22nd, 1882, the Korean monarchy surrenders and signs the Treaty of Chemulpo, the first unequal treaty signed by Korea with any foreign power. Over the succeeding two decades, the US sends troops into Seoul to quote-unquote protect American interests. The Treaty of Chemulpo, as many of you know, was a treaty of, quote, friendship and amity between the peoples of Korea and the United States. Both nations agreed to safeguard one another in the event of aggression by a third country. It only took two decades for the US to annul this agreement. It usually takes about three decades. And this agreement was annulled with a secret treaty with Japan called the Taft-Katsura Agreement of 1905. It's a very important agreement because I think there were very good connections between Korea and the Philippines. And basically, this agreement, the Taft-Katsura Agreement, allowed US to dominate the Philippines in exchange, Japan would be allowed to take over Korea. And which is what happened in 1910. Japan formally annexes Korea and starts a reign of terror that lasts almost five decades until their defeat in the Second World War. So you may wonder, could things get any worse? After all, the Americans have come to liberate, this is 1945, Korea from the dark days of Japanese colonialism. Shouldn't we be thankful? Shouldn't Koreans gratefully acknowledge our saviors? Well, tell that to the freedom fighters who had victory snatched away from them by American forces, which dismantled people's committees around the country and reimposed the structures of Japanese control and their collaborators. Tell that to the over 300 people killed at Nogonri by American troops during the Korean War, and untold thousands of other massacres that have not come to light. Tell that to the over 20,000 Koreans who were, even before the Korean War, slaughtered on Jeju-do, 2/3 of the island's population by former collaborators of the Japanese military and anti-communist vigilantes under the control of American military officers. Tell that to the thousands of Korean citizens in Gwangju in May 1980, when they rose up against the military dictator Chun Doo-hwan and were murdered by military units under the control, the operational control of a US general during the Carter administration. Tell that to the hundreds of political prisoners who are still detained under the national security laws by the Korean Central Intelligence Agency, an agency that was formed under American guidance. Tell that to the hundreds of Koreans, military sex workers, brutally assaulted, raped, and killed by American servicemen who have virtual immunity under SOFA, the Status of Forces Agreement, an artifact of Western imperialism, and acts of extraterritoriality for those of you who have studied history. Tell that to the people of Myeongri, a beautiful farmland area turned into a bombing range and weapons test center by the US military and its contractors. Tell that to the 4 million people who have lost their jobs in the 1997 crisis created by the US-led IMF, International Monetary Fund. These are all echoes of the USS Sherman. And by the way, I got a chance to go to Pyongyang a few years ago and see the site of the USS Sherman. It's a tourist attraction now, and right next to it is the USS Pueblo, which many of you know is a spy ship that the Koreans had captured in the 70s. And that's also a very wonderful tourist spot for anyone wanting to go to Pyongyang. So knowing this, ask yourself again these questions. Why are Koreans not grateful for America's helping hand? Why are there millions of Koreans in the streets demanding the removal of US troops? Why are North Koreans standing up to a superpower that can so easily wipe them out? Because I am, because we are, part of a living history of democratic struggle, because we, Koreans and Filipinos, are part of a movement for liberation and self-determination, one that has brought down dictatorships and superpowers alike, because we, all of us here and out there, are part of a revolution, one that puts the needs of people over capital, one that puts the needs of people over patriarchy, one that puts the needs of people over white supremacy, one that puts the needs of people over all sources of oppression. So Koreans and Filipinos unite. You have nothing to lose but your chains. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you so much.